Leadership shouldn't be about who speaks the loudest, but rather who speaks the truest. I'm Charlotte Otto. Welcome to Speech Bubbles, the podcast that's rewriting the rulebook on leadership, communication, and success. In every episode, we're bursting the bubbles of traditional leadership, bringing you raw, real conversations with trailblazers who don't just challenge the status quo, they obliterate it. We're talking to heads of communication who know the power of words, HR mavericks reshaping workplace culture, and leaders from backgrounds that have been silenced for far too long. This is where vulnerability meets strategy, where authenticity beats artifice, where diverse voices don't just speak, they roar. Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder or building your own, Speech Bubbles is your roadmap to leadership that's human, powerful, and unapologetically you. Are you ready to transform how you communicate, lead, and succeed? Then let's burst some bubbles. Hi, so I'm alone in the studio today with a bunch of questions that have been sent in to me by Speech Bubbles podcast listeners. And I'm really grateful for the questions that have arrived. And they're a mix of questions about publishing the book and about what it's been like to start a podcast at the same time as launching a book. And I'm going to dive straight in with the listener questions and start with the questions that are around the book. So one listener said to me, now that you've been out in the world launching the book, what feedback has surprised you? And it's really interesting, particularly when you're in a room with people, to discover what resonates, because it's not always clear when you're planning a speech or a keynote or words that you're going to say, what lands with an audience or not. So the first event that I held when launching We Need New Leaders in June was a keynote at a communications conference in Vancouver. And there I spoke about vitamins versus aspirin, which is this idea that you should work on your reputation during the good times because it will create a reputational moat or a narrative moat around you in advance of the bad times. And I spoke about it in terms of protecting the reputation of a business, looking after the reputation of a CEO, and also because I was talking to heads of comms, I was also saying to them, don't forget about your own reputation. And the metaphor of vitamins versus aspirins, which is a metaphor that came from one of the interviewees in my book, landed really well. But during the Q&A, I was quite taken aback, in a positive way, but still taken aback by a very long set of questions around the reputation of teams. So I think the background to this is coming from comms folks. Communicators are a little bit where HR folks were maybe 20 years ago. They're very engaged with this question of getting their seat around the table. How do we get the leadership team to listen to us? How do we get people to respect communications in the organization? So I think that was where that question was coming from. And it led to a lot of talk in the room. But it also led me to thinking this is something that I need to work on in the second half of this year, is really to start thinking about what are the elements that make up the reputation of a team. Because as one of the folks in the audience said, is it just the aggregate of all the reputations of the people in your team? Or is it something bigger or different? So it's definitely something I want to think about. It's very much a new element of reputation for me, and it's something I'm going to dig deeper into and spend some time researching. Then in London, we had a beautiful event in the October Gallery, which is a gorgeous gallery in Bloomsbury, and my MC, David Pullen, who's a very dear friend of mine, he and I had spent quite a lot of time together before talking through what types of questions we might ask, and he was very encouraging to me to talk about my South African background. And we made a small movie of that evening, and that movie is posted on my LinkedIn and so certainly will also soon be on my website. And it was very interesting to me that folks resonated with my stories of growing up in South Africa. So As a white South African who grew up during apartheid times, I was clearly part of a very small percentage of the population that was privileged by apartheid. And so there's always been a certain sense of discomfort, a certain sense of awkwardness about talking about it. But the way David helped me open up space to talk about it is he said, what experiences have you had in your life where you've seen, oh, that's not good leadership? And that really helped me to talk about growing up in South Africa, the terrible leaders that we had at the time, the fear of people being pulled off the streets, detention without trial, people being tortured in prison. And I said during that event that gave me a really strong sense of deja vu about what's happening in the US at the moment. And that certainly is something that South Africans of my generation sense now watching what's happening in the US. So that was a surprise to me as well, that I, through the help of a really kind friend, was able to find a way of talking about growing up in South Africa during apartheid in a way that didn't fill me with the usual shame, but also really speaks to the genesis of we need new leaders, which comes from, I think, deep inside me, this really powerful sense of justice, and that we need more diversity, we need equity and inclusion in leadership, because the types of leaders we have now are not the leaders that we need in this moment. So that came as a surprise to me. Another listener question is, which part of launching the book was more stressful, the writing, the marketing, or the waiting for reviews? And I should say that none of these processes have been stressful for me. I've loved all parts of them. I'd say the waiting for reviews is maybe the hardest, because it's, apart from occasionally asking people to write a review, it's more or less out of my control, whereas the writing and the marketing are two parts of launching that I've been very closely involved in. But I've loved the writing part and the marketing part almost equally. And this was something I discovered when I was writing fiction as well. I love the process of being in the writing cave, that amazing feeling of flow, getting words down, sentences, paragraphs, chapters. But it's also really fun to get out and talk about the book. So I have the joy of talking about it here on Speech Bubbles, but I've also been invited to several other podcasts, and I'm starting to do keynotes and speak to people on stages. And that is a joy as well, having the finally being able to share the ideas and concepts and really beautiful insights that came from my interviewees with others, and have the sense of them resonating. So I'd say I've loved all parts of launching the book. Here's a fun question. What's a misconception people have about authors once they hit a bestseller list? So it was very exciting on launch day that we need new leaders hit two bestseller categories in two countries. So four bestseller lists in the end. I should acknowledge that a lot of that was to do with we highly discounted the book on launch day, and this is not an unusual thing to do. So the misconception people may have is that if you have a book that you can now call a bestseller, that you're suddenly very rich. Well, very, very few writers make a living wage from writing books. Really only the top kind of 1% to 5% of writers earn a decent salary from writing alone. So there's usually all kinds of other parts attached to writing, particularly writing a business book, the consulting, the advising, the podcasting, the speaking on stages. So yes, if people think writers are rich, that is definitely a misconception. The next question is, was there a specific moment when you realized your book had truly landed with readers? I can't yet, because it's still really early days. I mean, it's only about 6 weeks since the book launched, so it's hard to put a finger on a specific moment. But there was something that touched me incredibly deeply, was that as people were starting to buy the book and get their copies, almost everybody who bought the book, whether they were an interviewee or not, or a friend or a family member or even people I don't know, people posted pictures of the book and short posts on LinkedIn. So that was extremely touching to me. And I think people wouldn't do that if there wasn't a sense that the book had somehow landed with them. So there were between, and have been and continue to be, around 70 different posts of people celebrating the arrival of the book or saying something about what's meaningful in it or quoting a paragraph. And when you've spent a year interviewing and in the writing cave and then planning the marketing, when you finally launch and you get that sense that it is landing with readers and a wide range of readers, that is very, very touching and very moving. So now we move on to a question about the podcast. And the question is, when you started Speech Bubbles, what did you hope it would become? And how does that compare to what it is today? So I would say that when I started Speech Bubbles, my ambitions were modest. I imagined that I would interview 5 to 10 of the interviewees from the book, that it would serve as a companion piece to We Need New Leaders, and that would probably only last a couple of months. Interestingly, now we've recorded somewhere between 20 and 25 episodes, so far more episodes than I ever thought we'd record. The podcast has reached a stage where people are contacting me to be on it, so it now encompasses interviews with leaders who are not interviewees in the book. And that's pretty exciting that people are getting in touch with me and saying they'd like to come on the podcast. So while it is still early days in a podcast's life, it is starting to feel like it has a, potentially has a life of its own. This particular season will probably end between 28 and 30 episodes, and we're launching one a week. So that's 28 to 30 weeks of recording a podcast every single week, which has been intensive. It's been a lot of work. But the thing that's surprised me the most is how much joy I find in podcasting. And I almost feel as if I've been in training for this my whole adult life. I've been preparing to become a podcaster. It was not intentional. It's been a complete surprise. But there's something about the journalism background which helps me to ask good questions, something about the corporate communications background which helps me to engage with people. I did a lot of interviews for the thesis and the book, so I'm comfortable in that one-to-one interview space. And I'm also pretty comfortable with going off script, so I prepare quite well and I have a standard set of questions, but I'm comfortable if somebody is saying something really interesting, going right off the script and following them down that interesting conversational avenue. So I do think on some levels that podcasting is well suited to my professional experience, but also to my personality in that. So I discovered during lockdown that I'm an introvert. Didn't actually know, but a lot of things started to make sense during lockdown. And I really enjoy deep conversations. I enjoy one-on-one conversations. I enjoy getting to the nitty-gritty of things. I love it when somebody's humanity flows out, as we've seen in the episodes. Sometimes I feel a bit weepy when somebody tells their stories. Sometimes I feel a bit weepy when I read out somebody's bio and I think, what incredible obstacles this person has been through to get where they are today. And actually, that's been an interesting learning for me, is that I'm starting to get better at acknowledging my own emotions and feelings in the moment, instead of feeling that I have to keep a very kind of professional podcaster's front, which essentially is the message of We Need New Leaders, that showing up in your full humanity is the best way to be a leader. So I'm learning a sense of comfort around being less scripted, going where the interview leads me, and being more prepared to acknowledge the emotions that are coming up. I have a question here that says, do you have a favorite place or time of day where ideas for the podcast or your writing seem to flow? So I am 100% a morning person. I am up early. The first thing I do after my coffee is I put on my hiking boots and I'm hiking in the forests around Heidelberg. And I do find that physical movement has always been the best way for me to unlock ideas. Sometimes I'm walking with my husband, sometimes I'm walking with friends, sometimes I'm on my own. And it's usually those moments where I'm on my own where that physical sense of movement in tune with the brain unlocks ideas and new things I can possibly talk about or work on. I tend to always record the podcast in the afternoons. My mornings are reserved for sports and activity and getting my head together. I like recording in the afternoons. Afternoons tend to be a sort of energy downtime for me, and spending time one-on-one with another human being gives me energy. So it actually is an ideal time to record, usually around 3 or 4 in the afternoon, giving me energy for the rest of my day. Someone says, what's something unexpected you've learned about yourself as a host? Yeah, I think I've already alluded to that. I'm learning about my preparedness to be spontaneous. While I have my list of questions prepared, I don't need to follow them. I'm not obsessed with them. I don't try and pull somebody back towards the questions. If I have a sense that they've already answered a question that I'm planning to ask in 5 or 10 minutes' time, I just let it drop. And I'm learning to love that kind of that thrill, that feeling of being spontaneous, that feeling of being unscripted, the feeling of following the joy of the particular conversation that I'm in. It's unpredictable. You don't know what's coming. You don't know what chemistry you're going to create with one other person in the recording studio. And that's been absolutely delightful, those surprises. Those spontaneous moments, the moments when we both laugh, or in a recent episode, I was able to tease somebody about what they said. And that is turning out to be the joy of podcasting for me. The next question is around, how do you prepare for an interview? So my prep is pretty standard and I do follow a routine. I have a half an hour pre-chat with the individual, and that's really just walking them through what's going to happen, or maybe touching up on parts of their CV or background that I don't know about. I do some research on them. I find a really great quote that I include in the intro, and I center the initial questions around that quote. Then we tend to get spontaneous and follow the joy in the middle of the podcast, and I revert to planned questions or the questions that I always ask at the end. And that kind of system is currently working very, very well for me. Here's a question about rituals. What are some behind-the-scenes rituals you have before hitting record? I mean, one thing I always do is make sure I have a glass of water. And that was a recommendation from the Solid Gold production team who I work with, because you can get a dry throat when you're talking or you're feeling a little bit nervous. So I always have water with me. I make sure that the room that I'm in is properly soundproofed. I warn any members of my family who are around to be a little bit more silent than normal. I don't have any deep or intense rituals. It's just making sure that I'm ready, my voice is ready, and the room is ready. And then somebody asks, if you could give advice to someone starting their own interview podcast, what would it be? And I would say, in order to have the deepest amount of fun, which is what I'm having with Speech Bubbles, follow your deep interests. Find people in the niche of your choice who you're utterly fascinated by, and follow that fascination, follow that passion, follow that joy. Tap into the human who's in front of you, try to understand them more deeply, give them opportunities to shine. You know, somebody, one of my early interviewees, Advita Patel, is a very experienced podcaster, and she said, you know, treat it more like a chat show. It's your podcast, your voice can be heard, and I completely get that. But I also feel that if somebody's given me their time, and they're a very senior leader, or they're a very busy human being, that I want to make sure that their time with me is valuable and that I help them to shine. So I almost feel a bit like I'm in I'm in service to them on some level because they're being extremely generous to me, giving me their time, their insights, and sharing their humanity with me. So that's it for this Ask Me Anything. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you've just arrived at Speech Bubbles, if you're new here, please do yourself a big favor and listen to the backlist. I'm seeing a lot of cynicism around leadership at the moment. There's a lot of talk about a return to a command and control style of leadership. And I really think if you listen to the back episodes of this season of Speech Bubbles, it will give you hope that there are great leaders out there who are empathetic, they're wise, they've done the intense and deep self-work, and they really understand how to engage and motivate and build great teams. It will, if you're feeling low about the world, listening to some of the interviews on Speech Bubbles will really give you hope. So I hope you go back and do that. Otherwise, please listen, subscribe, or rate the podcast, and be sure to share it with a friend and help us get the word out. This is the podcast giving us all hope about leadership. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.